Welcome to the Property Management Mastermind Show with your host, Brad Larson. Brad owns one of the fastest growing property management companies in San Antonio, Texas. This podcast is for property managers by property managers. You'll hear from industry leading professionals on best practices, new ideas, success stories, and lessons learned. This is your opportunity to learn about the latest industry buzz surrounding property management, as well as tips and strategies to improve your business. Now here's your host, Brad Larson.
Hello, everybody, and thanks for joining us here on another episode of the Property Management Mastermind Show. In this episode, we have Darren Hunter in studio, and Darren's going to be talking to us about fee maximization and the mindset to implement that. So this is very important because what he's going to talk about is pretty deep stuff, and it dives into not just implementing a fee maximization campaign, but goes behind it into the actual mindset of the company owner and the staff members on how to actually put that into play. So it's very fascinating what he talks about. He gets into a few mind games with people and how to work with people in the best manner possible, but it's very impressive. He's very deep, and I'd encourage everybody to seek out more information from him after they listen to his interview. So here we go, that's Darren Hunter. Darren, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Brad. It's a real privilege to be here in sunny San Antonio. I mean, you're a guy that I've watched now for several years, and what can I say? You represent the very best that I've seen in the U.S.
No, thanks, Darren. I appreciate that. How was that lunch today we had?
Oh, wonderful. I think you guys do Mexicans so much better than us Aussies.
I'm telling you.
It was great.
Yeah, we have some great Mexican food. I'm just so happy to be around where I can get it. So let's kick this off a little bit and give me kind of a rundown of what you do in your mind to kind of give the audience a paraphrase so they understand a bit where you're coming from.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think let's just quickly start with a background. I am a property manager through and through. I first started in 1989 as a property manager in Adelaide, South Australia. And if you're thinking, okay, where's that? Well, just think the middle of Australia, right down the bottom.
Okay.
And we're well known for, you know, probably some of the best wineries with the Barossa Valley. But I started in 89. For the first 2 years, I think I struggled really with property management. It's only because I had a very low self-esteem and low confidence. And with the conflict that we get in the job, I found that extreme to deal with. Mm-hmm. But you know, I was able to deal with those issues. And since then, I've been a property manager, full-time property inspector, doing all move-ins, move-outs, and interim inspections, or what they call in Texas here assessments, mm-hmm. And full-time representing the company with 500 properties at court, or which we what we call tribunal. I've been a senior property manager. I've also been a state property manager with a very well-known Australian real estate brand, where I manage 28 property managers over 18 offices spread over a third of the country. So my nearest property manager was 50 miles away. My furthest was over 2,000, and I had to manage them remotely with systems. I was involved with about 16 rent roll purchases where we bought individual real estate offices, and then my job was to graft those rent rolls into the overall pool of the properties that we have, train the property managers, recruit them. And also now for the last 11 years, I'm a full-time professional property management trainer and consultant. And along the way, I've developed some specialties. So I run a webinar series where we teach time management, conflict management, risk management, communication, the warning signs of methamphetamine production in rental properties. We get right into the nuts and bolts. And we call that PM Power Nuts and Bolts. And we have about 400 attendees over five countries with that. So I love my nuts and bolts. But I have another area of specialty, which I stumbled across in 2000 when I started with a rent roll. And basically how it happened is that it was about 90 poorly managed properties. This big brand that I was with had just bought that rent roll. Mm-hmm. And they weren't, one of the deals was they weren't going to buy it unless they could find a good property manager. I was hired. I was dropped into it. And within a month of starting, my state real estate manager called me and he said, Darren, welcome on board. And we need to go and sign new management agreements because, of course, the business had been purchased.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I remember at the time it was very important because the fees at the time were very, very low. And I knew I could do much better than that. And I think, well, if I'm going to sign new management agreements, these fees are going up. But I'd never done it before. Mm-hmm. And the great thing is I hadn't done it or hadn't fallen into the trap that most business owners get into is, well, you can't do that here. My owners are too tight and all that. I didn't have that thinking. So I just went ahead and did it. And to my surprise, all that happened when I increased the fee significantly on 90 properties, the worst thing that happened is this. I had a phone call within several days of the letters being received by the owners, and I had a guy called Ian. And Ian called me up, and I'm sure that our listeners will be able to relate to this. Now, I need to understand, I'm very passionate about not just property management. In fact, I would like our viewers to stop doing property management, forsake it, run from it, renounce it, never ever do property management again, and instead do profitable quality property management. There's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this particular owner, firstly, a C-class owner.
Yep, I've heard that term before.
A C-class owner.
You dubbed that term.
Correct. And to be quite honest, the C-class owner came from Bob Walters, who's mm-hmm. another big trainer in Australia. And the characteristics are this, and Bob outlines them as they're over-demanding and unreasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So you call them up with some great news and they will pee all over your parade.
Right.
And make you feel really emotionally bad. And they'll dump all over you and you can never please them. They'll take up lots of your time. So with one owner, it might be a quick 5-minute phone call. This guy will be an hour and you'll get off and go, this guy just does my head in.
It's almost the 80-20 rule. You've heard
correct.
About that, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, yeah.
And whatever the rent is, they just want more, which means a property is going to be vacant, or we just attract what we call the desperates, the people that are bad for business anyway, who will pay whatever rent, but then not pay anything. And then the fees, well, they just want less.
Mm-hmm.
And they will put no money into the property with any maintenance or repairs or any upkeep. And therefore, they have a bad property that only attracts a bad tenant. Well, that's what we call a C-class. Now, I had a call from a guy called Ian who owns two properties in the rent roll, and he wasn't C-class. He was Z-class.
Worse than that.
He was worse. And he rang me up and he said, Darren, I'm really offended by this letter that you're putting up my fees. I'm leaving. And I thought, I've been in the job long enough to know I don't have to deal with people like you. The job's hard enough. I don't need you.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also the landlord of our office where we were.
Oh, wow.
And we had an apartment out the back that we couldn't rent.
Right.
And we had this little, what we call timber framed property that has a low grade tenant, low rent, 40 minutes drive from the office. It was all bad. So we lost the two managements. And of course, the management of our office went to probably one of our biggest competitors. But I was really happy with that. But other than that, I had one owner call me up. And these are all the people that received their new management agreement in the post with increased fees. We want them to sign and return. The next one, I had a principal of the local primary school call me up. He says, hi, Darren, my name is such and such, and welcome on board. And I've got such and such a property, and I looked up on the system and I can clearly see it's a 4-bedroom home, 2-bath, quality, great. And he said, Darren, I'm very happy to sign this management agreement, but I don't agree with this particular fee. And I said, oh, okay. So if I just remove that fee, will you sign? He said, yes. And that was the only thing I lost. Two properties, mm-hmm. which weren't earning anything anyway and giving right. me a double the workload and not even half the income. So it was good to get rid of. And then I had just negotiated on one fee, but everyone else signed. So I took a step back and I thought, oh my goodness, what's gone on here? There's a lesson to be learned.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, one thing led to another and the profit margin had doubled. The company that I was working for had never seen so much money coming in. And at head office, they thought, well, we're paying off the rent roll purchase at such a rapid rate here, a lot quicker than what we anticipated.
Let's dive into that too, because that's where some people may not understand the dollars and cents of that, because we've gone through that ourselves where we say, okay, it's time to increase something. And we've gone out and talked to our owners. And of course, you know, you lose owners. I mean, we did one time a $25 a convenience fee per year. It was a technology fee per year. We lost one owner from that. And of course, he made a big stink of it. And he filed a complaint, all this other stuff. But those are the crazies, the Class C landlords that are out there.
Right.
But where I'm going with this is, so we lost one person. But what are the profits? What's the difference in the 100 that signed up? Right. Well, so what if you, would you lose $10 to make 10,000? Would you do that?
It is very much that. And what we find is that when I do a fee maximization campaign with brokers, or what in Australia we call real estate business owners or principals, and in most cases, there is loss.
Mm-hmm.
But the loss is so small and insignificant to the overall benefit of what we're doing. We're simply just getting rid of bad business, because I do what I call an autopsy. What was a business that we lost? We put it on the slab
mm-hmm.
and we analyze it. Always, and I run the stats, always an absolute minimum of 66% and a maximum of anywhere up to 95% or even 100% is bad business. It's that C-class owner. Mm-hmm. And when the thing is that we've got to make this, stop making this mistake that Australians make, United States or Americans make, mm-hmm. is anything with a roof and a front door will do. It doesn't do because it burns people out. It's really bad for business.
So that's what some of the things you mentioned in your training before, and correct. I really have taken that to heart here, is I would rather lose an owner than lose a staff member, especially some of the real good ones, because they're just too tough to replace or too tough to train. And I appreciate, you know, I appreciate them as people. And you look at, here's a great example. Just last week, we had a new owner signed up and he called one of my portfolio managers and was screaming at her from Hawaii because she had arranged for a day earlier for the photos to be taken. He's not even living in the home. Hmm. And so we fired him on the spot. I mean, we signed up the guy. We're thinking, oh, he's going to be a great, you know, potential owner, nice high-end home, but just went crazy on us to where he's like a class Z plus landlord, right? So you get those. You get those. You can't, you know, you can't avoid those. And that's just kind of a story I throw in there. But one of the things you need to back up about, and let's talk about how you change people's mindset.
Okay.
Because that's one of the things that you taught me was how to change people's mindset. Not just mine. I'm an easy sell. You can change me, you know, with, you know, just flick at me and I'll change. But to teach me to go and to teach my staff members to change their mindset. That's where I want you to talk
about. All right. So with mindset as regards to with bad owners?
A mindset is for working with owners. Profit maximizing your business.
Yes.
So let's say we wanted to put on a new technology fee, for example.
Yes.
And people in the staff are going to say, oh, you can't do that. We're all going to run from the hills. All the owners are going to leave us. Okay. You know, you and I have had this discussion before.
All right.
And the way you phrase it, just it's just eloquent. It's beautiful. I want you to spend some time and really tell the audience how to potentially change their mindset.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what we need to do first, Brad, is that I've written 11 profit laws regarding fees.
I've seen those.
Okay. And so we need to start digging down into some of the, to understand these laws. And these laws are a little bit like Sir Isaac Newton was, you know, sitting under an apple tree and, you know, sees an apple fall down and, you know, or what force brought that, you know, disconnected from the tree and to rapidly descend to the ground. There was a force there that really did that. And of course, you know, he didn't invent the law of gravity. He simply discovered the power of it. Mm-hmm. And we learn as mankind that the law of gravity is a law that you must obey. You can jump off a cliff and flap your wings as much as you like, and you are going to submit to the law of gravity, whether you like it or not, or doesn't even matter about your positive thinking. You're going down. Since then, we've invented the law of aerodynamics, which can overcome the law of gravity. So there are laws, and in regards to profit laws, there are certain laws that if we submit, it'll work for us. If we go against this, it's going to cost us money. So one of those laws to start with is understanding the law of the fee lid. And the fee lid simply says is that your mindset and your level of belief determines your fees, and you cannot do any better than what you believe that you are worth. And so
that's deep. I love that
term.
It is
deep. It is deep. And now we understand what the word believe is, because in our English language and in our culture, we can really mess around and water down the true meaning of that word believe. Mm-hmm. The word believe means knowing. Now, Brad, if I said to you, do you believe that you're good at property management?
Sure.
You'll go, absolutely, because there's a deep heartfelt conviction that when you said sure, there is conviction in there in your heart that comes out through your eyes that, yeah, I know that I'm good at property management. So that's where we use the definition of the word believe. We know that we know that we're good at it. But if you believe that you're worth, for example, your leasing fee, and if someone says, well, the other guy down the road, well, he's not charging a leasing fee. Well, why should you? Well, Mr. Smith, yes, but we are worth it because. And then we go through a list of things. That's called justification.
Yeah. It's also called points of difference.
Yeah.
That's another way to phrase that here in the States is points of difference. So you had an opposite to that as well that I really, really like. And I'm going to butcher this, but I'm going to have you correct me and say it correctly. Something to the effect of, in the absence of value, the only thing that you can change is your fees.
Correct. Well, that's on a quote that I saw that where value is missing, where you have chosen to look the same as everybody else. And your only difference is your logo is green and someone else's is blue and another one's yellow. And that's the only differences that the owner can see when he steps into the market, and you cannot be perceived anything different. Then they will then enforce the difference. You see, human nature is, Brad, that everybody is looking for a difference. Everybody wants a difference. Either you provide one and they'll run with it, but in the absence of you providing a difference or absence of you providing value, then they'll be finding a difference and look for one. But a difference will be found. Mm-hmm. You either give one proactively or it's going to be taken from you reactively, because then the focus then goes on your fee because you're no different from anybody else.
Yeah.
And you are becoming a magnet for fee discount requests when you choose not to have effective points of difference.
That's right. We've defined discounters here, or at least I have in the first episode. And that's where, let's say you're sitting across the table from an owner and your advertised fees are X, and they turn around and say, well, your competitor down the road is doing this management type of service for less than X.
Yes.
Will you match that?
Yes.
And it turns into the slide the napkin across the table type stuff. Yes, we'll do it for X. That's a discounter.
Yeah.
And so that's one way of getting business. You know, I've mentioned about this before. I don't believe in that. I think what people should do is price their services to where their market's going to see it work well. Consider potentially a 2 or 3 or 4 tier pricing structure.
Yes.
And then never deviate from that.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct.
You know, one of the things that I think you might have mentioned this to us before, is if you have to give something of minimal value, not the management fee. So maybe elaborate on that just to kind of throw out what you think.
Okay. So from that point of view, you play different cards. And I work with business owners that, for example, have for years and years and years, the card that they play, the ace up their sleeve that they use, that they get leveraged to impress the owner to use them over their competition, would be a discount off the management mm-hmm. fee.
It's easy. It's right there.
It's right there. And that's their card. Another one the other day is I've been dealing with a business owner in LA. Mm-hmm. And we went out to lunch in Santa Monica. And he said, Darren, this is the issue I've got. For years and years, the card I've been playing is, we're only going to charge you one fixed management fee per month, and there will be no other fees. So now that we're talking about maximizing his fees and adding some other fees, he has that word echoing in his mind saying, Darren, I feel I'm going to lose my integrity with my owners because they are going to remember. Now, I know with fee maximization, all of that can be undone. We can reverse that damage. We can reverse that mindset. We can do it very, very successfully. That was his calling card that he used.
Well, you called it lid the other day.
Yeah. Well, we talked about that. Well, look, we need to go back to the fee lid, okay. Brad, very fee quickly, and then we'll move on.
Okay.
Because understanding the law of the fee lid, your belief sets the maximum fees that you can do. You cannot do any better than the fees that you're currently charging. Because if someone comes and says, well, why aren't you charging a higher management fee? Then it will be because of, and then all these things will start coming in your mind, because we've got cheaper competitors down the road, because our owners are too tight, and all these mindsets in your mind will say, no, you cannot do any better because. So we are limited by our fee lid, which is our mindset. Now, the law of the increased fee then extends from that if we believe that we're worth it, mm-hmm. and then we know how to justify it with a script. Yes, Mr. Smith, our leasing fee is worth more because of point of difference,
X, point, y,
of difference point of difference, yep. With conviction, we believe it. Then the owner is going to go, they're going to believe it. You see, belief is transferable. Mm-hmm. If I believe it, you're going to believe it. Then you are persuaded to my way of thinking.
This is a good point to bring up because our listeners may not know the background behind Australian laws. And I want you to kind of take a few minutes to expand on this, and to paraphrase it and then let you run with it. Here in America, we can charge fees to tenants in most states. I wouldn't say overzealous, but there's opportunities there. And the fee law gurus, the gods, are not going to come grab you and throw you into fee jail. So tell me a little bit about what the Australian difference is versus here, and how much of a different mindset we have over here. And it's not right, wrong, or other. I'm just saying you have the Australian mindset where they don't charge any fees mm-hmm. to tenants, no matter what. And we have opportunities here in the States to potentially augment our manager fees with those types of fees.
Okay. All right. Let's just, there's two different mindsets here. Firstly, the mindset is exactly the same here as what it is in Australia, as what it is in New Zealand, and any other country I may work with in the future.
Let's not look past that.
And
let's,
the mindset
let's
elaborate is this. That. So for example.
So the mindset's the same no matter who you talk to.
You could take me down the road right now to a broker, and I can look at his fees and go, hey, we could actually increase your leasing fee here. Hey, how are you doing a lease renewal fee? Have you considered this fee? I'll look with your tenants here. Have you considered a lease sign up fee or whatever? And he'll, well, Darren, that's not going to work here. You're from Australia. What do you know about our market? Our owners are too tight. Our owners have been with us too long. If I increase the fees, our owners are going to go down the road to the cheaper agent. He's going to give me a hole. There's that. There's the law of the fee lid at work.
It's right? Amazing that that does, it equates to both markets, yes. Both giants, yes.
So,
world.
So let's just then say, They'll accuse me of being a foreigner. What do I know? I'm completely disconnected with the market here. Yet I could fly home tomorrow, and where I live in my suburb, I could go up the road to another office, with the nearest office to my home, which is about 1 mile away, and I could sit and look at their fees and say, well, have you considered increasing your leasing fee? You could be doing this, and there's some other fees that you could be doing. And they will tell me, Darren, that won't work here because our owners are too tight. And if we increase our fees, our owners are going to go to the cheaper agent down the road, and our owners have been, and exactly the same thing. The only difference is the accent will be different.
That's amazing.
And they'll say, I saw you on Facebook that you're in the United States. It will probably work there, but it won't work here. And so it's always the mindset that stops people. And so that's the one mindset. Now, the differences in mindset, it's really very much legislation-based. So, for example, some of the analogies I like to use. An analogy here in Texas, you've got a gun culture and a very strong one at that. And so if I came in and said, well, what have you got guns for? You're going to give me some very strong reasons why it's our right to carry guns. So we have a very strong gun culture. So just like you got a very strong gun culture, in Australia, we have a very strong consumer protection culture.
Good and
this
analogy.
This came out of several hundreds of years ago with Australia was founded on convicts, and it's well known that we had prison colonies. Am I saying that? Colonies.
Colonies,
that right?
Yeah.
Colonies. And so the British would then bring their trash to Australia, dump their trash on our shores, and that became our prisons. And the prisons and the prisoners over time were released from prison. They had farms, and they became, first, second, third, fourth, fifth generation. There were some states that were founded out of pioneers. Most of it was convicts. And so out of that then came the downtrodden worker and the high and mighty rich landlord who would then bully and dominate and with power over the little guy. And therefore consumer protection then came in, and then we went from there. So our legislation is very, very tough in Australia with consumer protection to a point where I do believe that the Australian level of property management overall is of best quality in the world from professionalism, because if you are legislated to work at a certain level, that will then become your minimum. And if that minimum is very, very high that you must operate, then that's the level of professionalism minimum that you will operate at. So this is really interesting to understand that in Australia with consumer protection, the tenant has become a protected species, a bit like the koala, a bit like our native animals, our protected species. Therefore, the tenant is also can be added to that list. So therefore, the tenant cannot be charged anything more than just rent.
And or late fees or
no late fees.
No
so
even if
I go,
fees
even or I go to consumer protection parts of the country here in the States, like California, where late fees are still, and application fees, it really stops there. In Australia, there is no fees whatsoever. And in most cases, you can't even charge a pet security deposit.
Wow.
You can only charge a security deposit and rent. And of course, if they're using water, then you can charge that back to the tenant measured on a meter. So that is consumer protection. And the tenant has a lot of rights in our country. There are certain states where, for example, in Tasmania, if the tenant is on a month-by-month lease, you can give 60 days notice if the property has been sold. You can give the tenant 60 days notice that the property is in such a state that it needs to be repaired and you'd have to keep it vacant for 6 months. And you can give 6 months notice if the owner or the owner's family wants to move in. But there is no other way to give notice at all unless the tenant breaches. And so we've got some archaic laws like that. And even here's another one. So in the Northern Territory, a tenant comes in and surrenders the property at the end of the lease, gives you the keys. You've now got to, within 7 days, go and do your exit inspection. You've got to, if the property needs cleaning or carpet cleaning or gardening, you've then got to organize the what we call tradespeople, you call vendors, into there, get the work done, then get the invoices back and get a special form served on the tenant to tell them what you're going to be taking out of their security deposit all within 7 days. Otherwise, you must give the full bond or what we call the bond security deposit back.
Yeah, that's tough. And those two stories just really explain to the audience that we have a good situation over here. Yeah.
So you've got some good laws.
Our mindset here is prime for fee maximization, profit maximization here versus it's a true uphill fight, not only with the mindset that you're fighting with in Australia, but also with the legislation that they have to deal with on a state-by-state basis. And they're all different. There's states over there, like there's states here.
Yeah.
And they all have different types of legislation, different types of forms. So interesting parallel, and I'm glad you expanded on that because that really kind of put it to light.
We're going to get some more juicy stuff here. Okay.
Cool.
We're going to start digging really deep into this mindset because I teach, for example, in Australia, 27 different owner fees. Now our listeners are going to go, oh my goodness, that is crazy. Because the mindset that I see here, particularly when I go into businesses, is that we don't want to nickel and dime our owners. Mm-hmm. We can add some more fees on for the tenants, but we're going to leave our owners alone. And I'm going to just now dig and dig because there is mindset which just isn't true. It's a dragon in the fog. That is, you think it's there, but it's not actual reality. So when we talk about adding or increasing fees, automatically, you see, I've worked with clients where we have increased their monthly fee income by an extra $3,000, way up to an extra $40,000 extra.
That's
per month.
For the company.
Per month, and not per year, per month in fee income with the exact same amount of properties as before. And we've done it within 4 to 6 months to get it up to those levels. And that's very much dependent, of course, on the amount of doors.
Well, that's pretty exciting. So on the low end, 3,000 extra a month.
Yeah.
Would you take that?
Low end is three.
Yeah. Would
low
you walk away from that?
Three.
Heck no.
Yeah.
You had a great analogy one time. I'm going to jump in and help you here. One of the analogies you had was a credit card statement you get in the mail where you get a credit card statement that says, oh, we're raising your interest rates in the credit card to, you know, 0.10% higher. And what do? They look at it.
They swear and carry on and say a few colorful words.
Yep.
And but then suddenly your tasks, your emails going off, you get distracted with all the other things that we're all frantically busy with. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, we've got no time to deal with it. And guess what? You just accept it. And so therefore, most people, it's harder and more inconvenient, certainly when they're given a letter that their fees have been increased. It's a lot harder that though they may be upset with it initially, they then look at, well, hang on, this is what they think subconsciously. In fact, this is super conscious stuff. This is what the computer is saying when they're presented with such a letter. They're thinking, do I have a problem solved? Because do owners in this country have enough information to be able to manage their own properties? And the answer is yes. So why, therefore, Brad, are you in a job? All your people out this outside the door here, why are they in a job? Why is there such a thing as a property management industry in this country? It's because these owners don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. It's too stressful. They haven't got the time for it. They don't want the headache for it. And therefore, they give you their stress. And in return, you give them peace of mind. And this is where we're getting into now the secret and the source of why, if you present a letter to an owner that we've just added increase some fees, why they will stay and they will pay in most cases, except a very small minority, which is costing us so much, too much money anyway, and they're bad owners. So it's called peace of mind. People are motivated by a problem solved. Now, let's just get one thing clear. People hate spending money on every level. Everybody in this country, including me and you, do not like spending money at all, would rather park it in the bank. Mm-hmm. But if we're driving along the highway, for example, in our truck or whatever, and that little needle is starting to touch the E on that little dial where it's suggesting that we're about to run out of fuel. Now we're thinking, if we don't pull in to a gas station and fill up, something's going to happen. We're going to get stranded at the side of the highway. We could have our safety affected. It will be very inconvenient. It could be 12 midnight. It was going to cost me a lot more money to get more fuel back into the tank again. They're weighing that problem up. It's much easier now to pull into a gas station and fill up, and now they are motivated to spend money. Does that make sense?
It does, because it equates basically to property management.
Correct.
It's almost like the alternative cost for them.
Correct.
Is if they see that letter and say, oh, okay, well, my options are what? I can go fire that manager, do it myself, or hire another manager. And the headache to do all that, the cost involved, the stress, the time.
Well done.
Most people are not going to want to attribute that.
So we're getting into the law of alternate cost.
I wanted to circle back to on that analogy for the letter is a lot of people will take a look at that from a credit card company or whomever and say, oh, your interest rate's going to go up 0.25% because of whatever else. They look at us and they swear, like you said, and they say a few bad words, throw it in the bin, as you like to call it over there, throw it in the trash. And that's just the norm from then on.
Correct.
That new correction is now the norm. It is what it is.
And people forget about what the old fees were.
That's
right. They forget. And it's gone. It's water under the bridge. But the thing is that we only do that with owners that have peace of mind with us. Because if you're already a problem solved, you can then increase their fees. But if you are already an existent problem and then they get your letter,
right,
well, that's a different formula altogether.
Yeah, don't screw up. Don't,
correct.
You know, we've heard of management companies that, we had one that I've heard of recently where a new owner came in, bought out an old management company owner. So a new management company owner comes in, changed all the fees within the first few days. And so I've heard that half the owners practically left.
Yes.
And what do? You always tell people don't change a thing for how long?
So this is where we're getting into now, the five type clients that should not increase fees with. And it's all, if you think of a meter from 0 to 10, you only give it to the owners that have a high peace of mind. So the owners that we do not increase, because now peace of mind has been destabilized. You never ever increase or add fees with anyone that has destabilized peace of mind. And there's five type owners that have destabilized peace of mind. Number one, there are some brokers that sign fixed term management agreements, say for an initial 12 months. Leave it alone.
Yep.
Because you agreed on a fee structure at the start. That was a done deal. We shook hands. There was trust. Well, that trust shouldn't be shaken at all by now changing the gameplay 6 months in and saying, oh, by the way, now we've added some fees. That breaches trust. Okay, therefore can shatter the whole formula. So we don't touch for at least 12 months. Now, the next one is if it's again a non-fixed management agreement. Some people have open management agreements. And again, the 12 months, that's number two. So it could be fixed. Don't do it during a fixed term and don't do it in the first 12 months. The next one is purchase.
Let me interject here just because a lot of the listeners may be thinking, well, how do I do that? This is the implementation. So folks out there, pay attention to what this guy is telling us, because he's giving you the roadmap on how to implement. You don't just implement blanket wise and throw it out there. Here's the new fee, take it or leave it. He's saying, identify your customers, put them into a category, go after the ones that are, I wouldn't say easy, but are going to be less than hard, and identify them first. Continue on, Darren, please.
But these are what we call category one, the no-touch clients,
okay,
the no-touch owners. The next one is purchased rent rolls. So in your case with your friend, he broke one of the golden rules that if you go and purchase a rent roll, they are already uneasy coming over because they haven't had the choice. They chose their original property manager. Now you're saying, you know, I'm going to be changing company, but I have not had a choice in this and there is an upset, but they'll just put up with it. It's going to take at least 12 months to gain their trust before they forget about the old company. They're now used to you. And once they're bedded down and rooted deep after 12 months, then you consider your options. And usually, as long as they've had good level of service, maybe the same or better than before, then you should be fine. The next owner is simply the owners that are upset with us for whatever reason. Now, it could be our fault and it may not even be our fault. It doesn't matter. If the owner is upset because something has happened, then they are now destabilized. And so an example could be that they've had to have a new hot water, a water heater.
Right.
And that's cost maybe them, you know, $1,100, $1,200, $1,500 that they weren't expecting. And as far as they're concerned, that water heater broke down after 7 years and that should go for 20. So there are things there. We know that that's very reasonable, but they think it's very unreasonable. Therefore, it's your fault and I'm going to get upset about it. So do not increase the fees in that situation where they're upset, whether it's your fault or not. And the last one is if the property is pending vacant or it will be vacant. You know it definitely, or it is vacant. So and that's also now a destabilizing factor because the owner is going back from peace of mind mode into stress mode because now they're going to have to fund that mortgage for the time of the vacancy period. And now they're destabilized. So they're the five clients that we do not increase fees. The whole rule is as long as I have a good peace of mind with your service, then we can look at increasing fees. Now, getting back to your staff, Brad, and if we're going to implementing a fee. And here's an interesting example I'm going to give to you with an office that I work with in New Mexico. And this is an office that I did what's called a profitability partnership where I work with them over a period of time. I work very in-depth with them through the implementation, the sorting out of the owners into the categories. I do a fee analysis. I work with them through their spreadsheets. I work with them when the letters go out. I work with them when the objections and the phones will ring and the clients will object. It's how you deal with it through the negotiation process and out the other side. And one of the fees that we're installing into this particular office that their senior property manager that had a lot of influence over the other property managers. So we needed to get him on board. Mm-hmm. He had a problem with a new tenant fee that we were going to implement. And that was what we called a lease sign-up fee. Mm-hmm. We were actually going to charge a tenant to sign the lease.
Like a lease preparation fee, like so many apartment complexes do in the US.
Correct. And he had a real problem with it. Now, I'm not going to, of course, go into the dollar value of that particular fee, but it was very easy that this particular office, out of all of the other businesses in town, they were the only ones that drove out to the rental property, met the tenant there, and did the lease sign up at the actual rental property.
Oh, wow.
Because they wanted to induct the tenant to the property. So they would show them things like how to light the pilot light on the water heater. They would show them how to operate the garbage disposal correctly. They would show them how to change a fuse and all those sorts of mm-hmm. things. So I said to this property manager, okay, so let's just be like everybody else in town. Let's sign up the tenant at the office and hand out the keys there. And I said, would you have a problem with that? Well, he said, well, yeah, I would have a problem with that. Okay, what's the problem? He says, well, the tenant doesn't know how to relight the hot water, the water heater. Okay, so why is that a problem? Because then we'll have to send the handyman out there. Okay, so why is that a problem? Because the handyman's going to charge $85. And who's going to pay for it? He says, the tenant. And so I wrote down $85. Okay, so what else is there? He says, well, the garbage disposal in the end will be another $85. Mm-hmm. And then another $80. And before you know it, we had $500 written down on a piece of paper that would cost the tenant if the lease sign up was done at the office. Mm-hmm. So then with our fee, obviously was now considered value, because it was a lot less than that, that very clearly he could see that he would be ripping off the tenant if he didn't charge them a lease sign-up fee and could see the value of it. And from that day forward, he had no problem at all mm-hmm. in charging that new fee.
Did they justify that value just with some documentation, just saying, hey, Mr. Tenant, this is what we're doing?
He justified the value simply with his belief and conviction now mm-hmm. that he could see that that was easily justifiable.
Yeah.
You see, with your staff with any new fee, if they believe that they're worth it, that new fee, mm-hmm. and then they know how to justify it, then they're going to be able to do it. And this brings me to another story that I'm dealing with another company in the US, and this one is in Oregon. And actually, at the moment, their tenants are finding it very difficult to get out of the driveway because of the amount of snow.
Oh,
their tenants
right.
are locked in. And I had a really difficult time with a particular, their property manager, who just would not. Now, she's had 20 years experience in this rent role, but 20 years experience with what? Low fees.
Right.
And so she cannot see why this crazy Australian is going to add any value. In fact, she even went to the boss and said, if this guy comes into the rent roll and does the fee work, I'm going to be out of a job. That's what she more or less said to him. And she has so much sway over that business because this particular business owner is a property developer.
The audience can't see it, but I'm just shaking my head.
Yep.
Can I believe that comment? Go ahead.
Okay. So now the thing is that the broker concern, he's really positive about this, Darren, but we got a great wall and it's called the property manager mindset. How are we going to deal with this? Now, I said to him, I said, look, you know, this particular business, we did an analysis and we can easily find $150,000 a year. Okay, wow. In extra fees. And that wasn't too hard at all with their approximate 500 or 600 properties. And that's what we're going to make. And it looked like that unless we deal with this mindset with this head property manager, we can't just get, you know, ask her to leave because she has been in the business too long. And I'm happy to work with her, not a problem. But this very strong mindset, this isn't going to work and mm-hmm. don't let that man, you know, work in the business. And I said to the broker, I said, if your property manager caused a mistake and caused negligence that cost you $150,000 and you have to drive down the bank to withdraw 150 grand out of your bank account and pay that negligence off, how would you feel about that? And he says, well, Darren, I wouldn't be too happy about it. I said, right, your property manager is going to cost you $150,000 per year, every year, unless we change this mindset. Says, Darren, I get your point.
Pretty well said.
Yeah.
Very well said.
Now,
let's transition real quick and kind of tell me about your swing through the states and then where you're going next. And then kind of talk to us more about what you're doing, because we talked about this a little bit earlier before the show, kind of some of the things you're doing with these webinars and these web series and what you're doing there is phenomenal. I hope you can talk about that. So you were in New Mexico recently, right? Working with a company over there. You're in San Antonio now doing a San Antonio swing. And where are you heading next from here?
All right. So tomorrow I fly out to Washington, D.C. and I work with the NARPM Virginia group. And we're doing I'm doing a keynote session on fee maximization.
Okay.
And all the things that we've talked about, because 80% of what I do, Brad, is actually mindset. Mm-hmm. Because everybody, and including our listeners right now, are thinking if we did that in our rent roll, our owners would leave,
right.
And all about 5 or 6 objections. And I call that monkey chatter. Mm-hmm. But for example, our brokers in NARPM, Virginia, we're going to work on mindset. We're going to pull apart all of those little voices that we have in our head telling us why it can't be done and why it is myth, because I've done this hundreds and hundreds of rent rolls now over 16 years. And I know exactly what works and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the same, whether it's USA, New Zealand, or Australia where I work. Because it all comes down to owners' peace of mind. And we only do it with the owners that have a peace of mind with us. But, there is no real differences in the United States compared to Australia, except with the tenant fees. So when I get back to Australia, I can't teach on tenant fees.
I know it.
Whereas yeah. here, we have plenty. And I must admit, you know, your business is a shining example of some, it probably is the best list of fees that I've seen in any business in the US. It'd have to be yours.
Thank you. One of the things that we've tried to do here is use the common sense rule on implementing some of these fees. We don't try to gouge anybody. We're very fair. We provide value for everything that we do charge. And if you ever need somebody to give you an example of what's going out there in the market where you are, look at the apartment complexes. I've always been kind of one to run around and say that, because if you don't know what should be charged in your market, go to the nearest big apartment complex with 400 or 500, 600 units where they have centralized management throughout the country. They're the ones that will be charging those fees that are like, whoa, that's a new one. I haven't seen that before. And when people see that from apartments and then you put those into your business, they're a lot more readily acceptable. So if take one of your staff members that have just rented an apartment recently, my general manager who you met when you walked in, he had to rent an apartment in between homes where he sold a home, bought a new home. And he came to me with the lease and said, look at the stuff they're charging me. I can't believe it. And I don't want to get into it, but it was just, that's a great learning example. So to go back to what you can do for the listeners out there, the folks that have property management companies, tell us more about your website. Tell us more about what you do as your services. Really kind of give us some down and dirty on how you could potentially help somebody here in the States.
Okay. So I'm an international trainer. My main base that you can go to is my website, darrenhunter.com. And, you know, we do several things. We are very much focusing on webinars at the moment. We do have a nuts and bolts webinar, which is everything but fee maximization. It's not growth. It's not profit. It's right in the operational stuff. It's a conflict management. It's time management. It's stress management. It's communication. It's dealing with the warning signs of methamphetamine production in rental properties. It's a whole heap of different things.
Because you also have some good products in there you sell too, correct?
Correct. So they're the webinar series. We're looking at, if people want to come on board, we're looking at $99 a month Australian for you and your whole team to get hold of our webinar series. The Greenback is doing so well at the moment, and it's only let's just say it's probably about 30% less for American dollars. Mm-hmm. People can look at that. We are going to, in the next 2 months or so, release a profit and growth webinar series where it is all of those other things. It's, you know, increase the value of your business, increase the profit of your business, growth, and all those sorts of things. And we're actually bringing on some real big hitters in that particular field that are going to be guest presenters in that series. But also, I will be releasing in the next couple of months or so a membership series where people can subscribe. They will receive every 2 weeks a 30 to 60 minute recording, video recording of step-by-step on how to maximize your fees with the current owners and how to do it with your new owners as well, mm-hmm. with new business. We have over 25 lessons delivered over a year on a month-by-month plan, or they can pay up front and at a much better value price. They're the things that we've got in the making at the moment. In regards to products, you know, we do have a store there.
That's right. Where you should look up there. See that top shelf up there? A bunch of your stuff is sitting up there as well. I'm a big believer in everything you put out. I don't think it's dated at all. You know, the stuff that you were putting out 5, 6, 8 years ago is completely relevant to today. Absolutely.
Yes. And we also, people can go on to my knowledge library. We got, I'd probably be over 100 articles we've got on there now, but we have 100,000 web page views a month, which is a monster. I mean, we're just moving over to a dedicated server. We've probably got a bandwidth of about 100 gigabytes a month. It's huge. The average mm-hmm. website's about 2 gigabytes in download. We've got 100 a month for people just accessing our articles. So you can check out our articles there. Also, DarrenHunter.com Facebook page. We have the largest property management training teaching page globally. And you can certainly go on there and just keep up to date with what we're doing with articles and tools and tips.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites that we've implemented here in our business was the CD you put out called Zero Tolerance. And that's where you're talking about where you have a rent roll. You do not allow anybody to deviate from paying their rent on time.
Correct.
You have to have zero tolerance.
Yes.
Now, in the States, that here's some fun stuff for you because you may not know this. We have fair housing laws here in the States. And if you have a zero tolerance policy, which you absolutely should in written policy, the federal guidelines say you cannot deviate, because by showing favoritism, that is discrimination. Think about that.
And that sounds to me can work in your favor, because we don't have legislation interpreted like that from where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good news. But zero tolerance is not exactly a popular topic sometimes in Australia, where people accuse me of bully and harassment tactics. Here is my stand on this. What is the greater evil in a property management rent roll? A greater evil is being tolerant, allowing the tenant to fall behind past their point of no return. You mm-hmm. see, when a person looks at their rent or their income coming in each week, each 2 weeks, each month, when they get paid, and they look at that and they have vices in their life, and the vices are alcohol, mm-hmm. drugs, gambling, expensive living, and the like.
You said it best one time. It's not a money problem. It's a...
So your tenants that don't have a money problem, they get paid as regularly as what you right. do. They don't have a memory problem. They didn't forget to pay. They have an attitude problem. They have a priority problem.
That's right.
And they have other things that are priorities. See, when we have the vices in our lives, or tenants have vices, they have addictions, mm. those things have to be funded by the rent money. So the yep. rent money is in competition. So as property managers, if we are tolerant and we allow these tenants, you see, they deceive themselves. And what they deceive themselves is, I need that money in my account to buy this, 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 and this. And I'll have more next week and I'll catch up then. Mm-hmm. That is the great lie, because when they do then do misappropriate that money to whatever they're paying when it should be paying their rent, next week comes, they haven't got it. They go past their point of no return, which means they cannot catch up, and now they're headed for eviction. When an eviction happens, we have measured this and done studies on this in Australia, right from the point where we give our legal notice to start the eviction process, right through to driving to tribunal or court, driving to and from the property to make sure the tenant is still in possession mm-hmm. and hasn't taken off.
Occupancy check.
Yeah, mm-hmm. occupancy check. Several of those through the whole process, the amount of time we're on the phone to the owner. The owner is getting more stressed. Each phone call we do with an update yep. is
they're late on their mortgage potentially.
Yeah, a longer and longer conversation is getting more stressful as well. The more going back and forth from the property, and then going back and forth from tribunal or court, then getting our court order. water, having to attend the property with a bailiff or a sheriff or whoever's doing the work, the amount of time that takes getting back, then you've got to do your exit inspection and all the work. And then it's a lot. It's an eviction is huge, messy cleaning, carpet cleaning, gardening, handyman work. And it's so messy. We then have to go and meet the individual vendors at the property as well to make sure it's done right. We've measured it anywhere up to 32 hours worth of work, let alone the stress as well. Wow. And I say an eviction is like a packet of cigarettes and will take years off your life.
I agree with you.
And so what is the greater evil here? And so I believe the greater evil is tolerance, because I would rather what I call put the tenant's nose out of joint by being a little bit hard, by a little bit forceful, by being even a little bit rude, and that treating the tenant at 3 and 4 days behind as if they were 50. You see, my point is this: how long does it take for a tenant to pay their rent? How long does it take to log on online and pay the rent? A few seconds. Yep. And how many few seconds are there in 3 days? And they haven't phoned me to let me know the rent's going to be late. We should be offended with that. That's the zero tolerance attitude. Mm-hmm. And if we can then hardline, come down like a ton of bricks on the tenant within 3 days, and they get upset and they get offended, but guess what? They're still in the house.
And they know what's coming.
Guess what? Their children are still in accommodation. Mm-hmm. Guess what? Who's a winner? The tenant's a winner, the owner's a winner, and the property manager's a winner. But if we're tolerant, we let them go past the point of no return, the tenant gets then goes down the great chute. They cannot catch up. They're now headed for the cliff. Mm-hmm. They're headed for eviction. Who's the loser? The tenant's a loser. The tenant's children is the loser. The owner is a loser. The property manager's a loser.
Spot on.
Zero tolerance is all about what's the lesser of the evils.
I love that. We've adopted it. Now, Darren, absolutely just a wealth of knowledge here. I know you could go on forever. It's great stuff, man. I want to encourage everybody to seek you out online. Find out what you can do for them. Attend a potential NARPM event if he's going to be speaking, because you know you've been able to give us a ton of knowledge here at the NARPM community. So I wanted to thank you for coming on. Make sure everybody knows how to find you. We'll put it in the show notes as well. But again, Darren Hunter, thank you for coming. Appreciate it.
No worries. And if people want to email me, darren@darrenhunter.com, ask for the Essential Survival Guide for Crazy Busy Property Managers. We'll subscribe to our newsletters. I'll get you that some of my best 100 tips on time and stress management.
Awesome.
And you'll get a lot out of it.
Thanks, Darren. Well done. Thank you. Today's show has been sponsored by Virtually Incredible, providing tenant screening services, call center services, and video production services to property managers. You may also visit them at virtuallyincredible.com.
This has been a podcast episode by propertymanagementproductions.com. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast, leave us feedback, and come back for our next episode.